It may be appropriate tonight, with so many people gone, to ask, why are we here? And the question, though, is a somewhat ambiguous question because of the word here. It could be as specific as here in this building, or as general as here on earth. But since we're here in this building on earth at this time, let's consider it from both perspectives. So again, we ask the question, why are we here? And hopefully the first thing that pops into your mind is to glorify God and encourage one another. That should be the first thing that you think about. That's why we're here, not just here in this building, but here on earth, is to glorify God and encourage one another. Or as I said in our series on the church that we talked about last year on the church, and I talked about it last week, is to glorify God by transforming sinners into saints, ourselves and other sinners around us. That's the purpose of the church, and that's the purpose of our being here on earth. Now, I said turn to 1 Peter chapter 4, put a marker there, and turn to Acts chapter 17. Acts chapter 17. In Acts chapter 17, Paul is in Athens. He's waiting for Timothy and Silas to come down from Thessalonica, and while he's there, in Athens, this is a city that is full of idolatry, full of idols everywhere you look. You know, it's like TVs in a house. Everybody has one. They're everywhere. And so he's provoked by that. And when he's just looking at their paganism and how deep it is, it provokes him to the point of going beyond just talking to the Jews in the synagogue. He actually starts talking to just normal Gentiles, non-Jewish people in the markets, just anywhere he can. He starts talking to people because he wants to talk about God and trying to break through this pagan shell that they've created around themselves. Look at verse 16 of Acts chapter 17. It says, now while Paul was waiting for them in Athens, his spirit was being provoked within him as he was observing the city full of idols. So he was reasoning in the synagogue with the Jews and the God-fearing Gentiles. So there would be Jews and God-fearing Gentiles at the synagogue and in the marketplace every day with those who happened to be present. So he just found kind of a place to stand and start talking to people as they came by about Jesus Christ. This was important to him. And so he was reaching out to them, and apparently there were some people who came along that said, well, you know, this guy's interesting. Let's bring him up to the big stage, the big place up on the Areopagus, there on top of the mountain there just on the edge of the town. So take him up there and let him speak to the intellectuals, the intelligentsia, the smart people. And so he goes up there, and I want you to notice what he says to them, how he approaches them, beginning in verse 22. Verse 22 of Acts chapter 17. So Paul stood in the midst of the Areopagus and said, men of Athens, I observe that you are very religious in all respects. For while I was passing through and examining the objects of your worship, I also found an altar with this inscription, to an unknown God. Therefore, what you worship in ignorance, this I proclaim to you. The God who made the world and all things in it, since he is Lord of heaven and earth, does not dwell in temples made with hands. Nor is he served by human hands as though he needed anything, since he himself gives to all people life and breath and all things. And he made from one man every nation of mankind live on all the face of the earth, having determined their appointed times and the boundaries of their habitation. And here's where we get to the point, that they would seek God, if perhaps they might grope for him and find him, even though he is not far from each one of us. And so he's telling them, this God that you worship, this unknown God, let me tell you who he is. He's the God who made the world. He made everything. He rules everything. We don't give him anything that he needs. He gives us everything he needs. But what he wants from us is for us to seek him, to try to find him, to reach out for him. That's the purpose of life, to seek God. That's why we are here. Now in our text, back in 1 Peter chapter 4, I want us to notice that Peter says essentially the same thing there at the end of our text that we're going to be looking at tonight in verse 11. There he says, The idea is that in all things, God may be glorified. Well, let's read the entire text and see how Paul or Peter addresses this in more detail beginning in verse 7. He says in verse 7, "But the end of all things is near. Therefore be of sound judgment and sober spirit for the purpose of prayer. Above all, keep fervent in your love for one another, because love covers a multitude of sins. Be hospitable to one another without complaint. As each one has received a special gift, employ it in serving one another as good stewards of the manifold grace of God. Whoever speaks is to do so as one who is uttering the utterances of God, who is speaking the utterances of God. Whoever serves is to do so as one who is serving by the strength which God supplies, so that in all things God may be glorified through Jesus Christ, to whom belongs the glory and the dominion forever and ever. Amen." At the end of that text, we see where he says, this is our goal, our purpose, our reason for being here is to glorify God, so that God may be glorified. And so that's the title of our lesson tonight, is glorify God. And we do this with the question of how do we glorify God here? Now, there's a lot of encouraging one another there in the text, but what we need to see tonight is how to glorify God. We're not going to talk so much about the idea of encouraging one another, though that's part of it. We want to talk about how to glorify God. Because when you think about it, life brings so many things to interfere with our service to God. It tries everything it can to try to keep us from doing God's will, to serving God. All kinds of things get in the way, especially as we know at this time of the year. There are so many things, people coming and going and traveling and engaged in so many things. So we have to understand that we have to be able to look past that and work past all of that to remember that our real purpose, the real reason we're here, the real reason we exist as human beings, is to glorify God. And so what we're going to do as we look at our text tonight is we're going to see four practical answers that Peter gives here in this text. The first one is, the end of all things is near. And we talked about that last week. Live as if the end is near. So we won't talk about that again. But the second one is to be sound in mind. The third one is to be stretched out in love. And the fourth one is to be stewards of grace. Those are the four things we're going to look at from the text. And think of it as kind of, this is a lesson of practical takeaways. You know how at the end of some of my sermons, I'll have just some practical takeaways. In a sense, that's really what this lesson is about. It's about the practical takeaways of how to glorify God here on earth. So let's look, first of all, at being sound in mind. What does that mean to be sound in mind? Let's go back to the text there in 1 Peter 4 and verse 7. It said, we looked at the end of all things is near, therefore. So knowing that, living as if the end is near, here's how we should live. Sound of judgment, be of sound judgment, and sober spirit for the purpose of prayer. Now that word sound judgment and sober spirit, those two phrases, they're words, that's just one word in Greek, it's a phrase in English. They refer to our mental faculties, our minds, our brains. Our manner of thinking, the way we approach our thinking about things. And so the first one there, the first word there is, in the New American Standard Translations, says sound judgment. Some other versions say things like sound clear-minded, sound mind, serious, self-controlled. And they're all fitting, as it's the idea of having a very careful outlook that reflects true balance in life. A moderate or temperate outlook that doesn't jump between extremes. There's no highs or lows. It's the idea of being steady and steadfast and not given to being pulled one way or the other. And that's not an easy thing to do because the world wants to pull us every which direction it can. And when we say moderate, I'm not talking about being moderate like the world, says, and moderation and everything. You ever run into anybody that says, well, you know, when you start talking about, you know, things that they ought to do or things that they ought not do, and they say, well, I'm moderation in all things. Years ago, Karen and I lived in Burnett, Texas, and she worked in a pharmacy, and the pharmacist there was just an irritating guy. He was one of these guys, he thought he knew more than everybody else. He thought he was cleverer than anybody else. And he would always be poking at us, provoking, kind of like Paul was provoked by those idols there in Athens. And he would provoke us. And every time I'd come to pick up Karen or come to see her there at work, he would say something about, start yow-yowing at us about, well, moderation. You know, I believe moderation and everything. And the thing was, he was promoting consuming alcohol, dancing, doing all those worldly things. He's talking about worldly lifestyle. And so after a while, I got tired of that. And I said, well, yeah, so let me ask you something. So when you say moderation in everything, how far do you want to take that? You want to say it's okay to be moderation in murder and only kill a few people? Be moderate in adultery, only sleep around with a few women instead of your wife? He said something. I don't remember what he said. But I'll tell you what, I will never forget the look that he gave me. He did not think I was funny. He did not like that because he didn't like the idea of his concept of moderation being questioned. Well, this balanced view, this sound mind, comes not from the world, but from a transformed mind that comes from the Lord. Look in Romans chapter 12. Romans chapter 12. Let's read verses 1 and 2 to kind of set the background here for our discussion there of verse 3. Romans chapter 12 and in verse 1 and 2 talks about being transformed, having a transformed mind. Verse 1, he says, therefore I urge you, brethren, by the mercies of God, to present your bodies a living and holy sacrifice acceptable to God, which is your spiritual service of worship. So he's saying, here's what you give to God, a body and a lifestyle that glorifies Him is what he's saying there. And then in verse 2, he says, and do not be conformed to the world. Don't be shaped by the world, but be transformed. And that word conformed means you have the mold of the world. It's like you have a plastic mold and you're poured into it, and whatever the mold shape is, that's how you come out. That's the idea there. The world has a mold and it wants to pour us into it and shape it according to its choices. And Paul is saying there, don't let that happen. Instead, be transformed by the renewing of your mind. And that transformed is the change from inside out. It's the word metamorphosis. You know, a butterfly goes in, a little caterpillar crawls into the cocoon. Anybody here read the Hungry Little Caterpillar? I love that book. It's really cute. Anyway, so that hungry little caterpillar crawls up into that cocoon, builds a cocoon around himself or herself, and then pops out as a beautiful butterfly. That's the description of the Christian. We're like that. And we need to be like that hungry little caterpillar, just filling ourselves with God's Word and filling and never satisfied, never enough, always wanting more so that we can grow and turn into that transformed person. So he continues there, by the renewing of your mind, so we're changed, it's not food, it's spiritual food, the Word of God, so that you may prove what the will of God is, that which is good and acceptable and perfect, for through the grace even to me, I say to everyone among you, not to think more highly of himself than he ought to think, but to think so as to have sound judgment as God has allowed it to each a measure of faith. So the transformed mind gives us a moderate mind, a balanced mind that knows our value in the world around us and to the church and to our family, but knows not to think that we're more valuable than we really are. Not to think too highly of ourselves. And so that's the transformed mind that he's thinking about. Now, the second word there in the text, sober spirit, that's one word, and it's the spirit is kind of added there because I think it's the idea of the mind or the spirit. And it was used frequently as the opposite of drunk. So this is sober-minded versus intoxicated. Because when you think about it, an intoxicated mind is imbalanced. It's off kilter. It's not in place. It's not clear. And so he's saying here, we need to have a mind that is balanced, clear, and thoughtful. That's the goal. That's the idea. Now, the King James Version, if you have that, says watch. And it's the idea, again, of having clear of mind, of thoughtful. But when it says these words like thoughtful and clear-minded and serious, as one version says, the idea is not that we walk around with these glum faces. Now, I've told you about my resting face. It's just a mean resting face. That's what the kids call it. Anyway, it's just the way I am. So, I try to remind myself to keep a little smile. My wife says, look like I'm smirking. So it's like I'm stuck. So it doesn't mean we walk around with this serious look on our face. I'm serious. I'm so serious. I don't want to talk. You know, I'm a Christian. I'm very serious. No, that's not what he's talking about. That's not the idea at all. What he's talking about is the mind and the thinking. Because after all, you know, go back to our text in 1 Peter chapter 4. Look at verse 13. In verse 13, he says, even in suffering, rejoice, be joyful. But to the degree that you share the sufferings of Christ, keep on rejoicing. So we need to be filled with joy and happy. So joyful people who are sound-minded don't walk around looking like they just bit into a sour lemon. Have any of you ever had a Japanese persimmon? Raise your hand if you've ever even heard of a Japanese persimmon. Have you ever bitten one? Okay, we should have a Japanese persimmon tree in my yard when I was growing up, and I don't know why, because those things were nasty. You take a bite out of those, they even when they were ripe, you take a bite out of that and your mouth goes, it's, you know, your cheeks try to go out the other side, it sucks in so much. We don't want to walk around looking like we just ate a Japanese persimmon. That's not the way approach of life. We need to find the balance between being silly and sour, and the joy is right there in that middle. That's where we need to find. Now, we also notice back in 1 Peter chapter 4, and verse 7, that is for the purpose of prayer. Proper praying requires serious, clear-minded thinking. Well, let's go to the next takeaway here, and that is to be stretched out in love, and that's in verses 8 and 9. Verse 8, he says, above all, keep fervent in your love for one another, because love covers a multitude of sins. Be hospitable to one another without complaint. Now, the word in the text there is keep fervent in your love toward one another. And the idea of fervent is stretched out to the limit. It's like a football player or an athlete reaching out for the ball. Any of you here, who here is a baseball fan? Any baseball fans? Okay. You're watching, a baseball, like a first baseman or, just reaching out for a ball to catch that ball, for the out, try to get that out before the runner gets it. They're stretched out. Or the runner who's stretching out trying to get that base so that they're not, so that they're safe. Or the football player just giving it all, reaching for that goal line, stretching out, just putting everything on the line. Or an athlete like a gymnast. They stretch themselves out to try to get a hold or to hold a position or to make a flip or a jump or do something like that. It's that kind of stretch. So what he's saying here is that the Christian needs to stretch himself or herself in love. Go as far as we can, stretch out and strain our heart and soul to expand our concept of love. That means our love has to reach out past our self-imposed limits. And this gets a little difficult because we have limits and we have things that we like to do and people that we like. And so we're tempted to want to be love people that we like and that are likable. But if we have somebody that's not, that we don't really like, that we struggle with showing them love. We have to put those limitations away. It's the kind of love that doesn't seek justice every time somebody hurts us. Somebody hurts me, I want justice. I want a pound for a pound. I want an eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth. I want them to get what they deserve. Now, when we hurt somebody, what do we want? We want mercy. We want forgiveness. But when somebody hurts us, if we're not careful, if we're not stretched out in love, we're going to want them to get what they deserve. Or we hold grudges. We're not supposed to do that. And we're not supposed to let dislikes simmer. Personality clashes happen. I bet you're shocked to think that there are people who can't get along with me. And I'm pretty easygoing, but there are people that just get on my nerves too. But we have to stretch beyond that and reach out to them in love. And notice he says there, not only is this stretching out for them, but it covers a multitude of sins. In the class this morning, they read from Matthew 18 about the judgment of the person who has sinned against you. Before that passage comes into play, if it's something minor, or if it's somebody that said something or done something that hurt our feelings, and we're not, it's questionable whether or not it was sin, let it go. Don't make that something that we take before the church. Just be the one who lets those kind of things go. Cover a multitude of sins. And so personality clashes and irritants, we need to just cover over them like they don't even exist. But you know, there are some people who are determined to remember every slight, every fight, and every hurt, and hold it against everyone who caused them any pain. That's not the way a Christian should live. Peter says let it go. Paul says let it go over in 1 Corinthians chapter 13. This is the chapter on love in 1 Corinthians 13. Three verses 4 through 7. And just get a reminder here of how love acts. How love treats other people. Verse 4 of 1 Corinthians 13. Love is patient. Love is kind and is not jealous. Love does not brag and is not arrogant. Does not act unbecomingly. It does not seek its own, is not provoked, does not take into account a wrong suffered. And the idea there is it's not got a list and say, okay, he irritated me, she irritated me, she made and have a long list of all the things somebody did to irritate them. Love doesn't do that. Does not rejoice in unrighteousness, but rejoices with the truth. Bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. And so love is very freeing because it doesn't allow us to let these kind of things simmer and stew and make us bitter, angry people. We just don't do those kind of things. That's the kind of stretched out love that we need to have. Now, go back to 1 Peter chapter 4, and verse 9, he also adds this, be hospitable to one another without complaint. When it talks about the idea of hospitality, sometimes it means opening one's home, but as we pointed out in a recent sermon, not everybody has that ability. We talked about this when we talked about elders. Elders have to be hospitable. But elders don't have to be rich. Nothing in the scripture says that they have to be rich. So if an elder doesn't have the money to be having tons and tons of people into their house, hospitality does not mean just go broke hosting people because you're an elder. And it doesn't mean go broke hosting people just because you're a Christian, a faithful Christian who stretches out in love. Now, if you have the ability, then we need to be exercising that. But maybe you don't have a big house or the place where you can do that. And take people out to eat. And if you can, pay for it. By the way, this is not fishing for meals. Some people do things, they're fishing for a compliment. I'm not fishing for a compliment. I'm not fishing for a free meal. If you can't, but if you can take somebody out and can pay for their lunch, do it. If you can't pay for the lunch, invite them anyway. Don't think that you have to pay for it. And it doesn't have to be someplace expensive. You can go to Gaddy's and eat for $15. You can go to just about any of the other places and eat for less than $15. Get a meal and a drink. It doesn't have to be the most expensive place. But you know what happens when you do, when you go out with people and eat with people that maybe you hadn't spent time with before? You sit down and you share a meal, you talk, and you get to know each other. And you learn about one another, and you begin to stretch and stretch and stretch and grow your capacity for love. Well, the last thing we want to look at tonight is the stewards of grace, and that's in verses 10 and 11. As each one has received a special gift, employ it in serving one another as a good steward. That's just a servant who is in charge of things that are given to him that don't belong to him. As good stewards of the manifold grace of God. So the grace of God doesn't belong to us. We don't get to decide who gets it and who doesn't get it. So we act as stewards. We hand it out. Verse 11, whoever speaks is to do so as one who is speaking the utterances of God. So if you're somebody that can preach or teach like I try to do, then do it. But know that you're speaking God's word, not your own. Then he says, whoever serves is to do so as one who is serving by the strength which God supplies, so that in all things God may be glorified through Jesus Christ. So not all of us have the same gift. I asked somebody who shall remain nameless if they'd leave singing tonight. And the answer was no. And I laughed and said, well, you've got the same answer I got. No. Thank you, Gary, for being here to lead singing tonight. Coughing or not, we didn't care. We're glad you did it. So not everybody has the same gift, but all of us have some gift, some ability. And we need to put that to use serving others. Maybe it's the ability to lift people up by word, either publicly, like from the pulpit or from a Bible class, or privately. Just we got the knack for putting our arm around somebody and saying the right thing to them to encourage them. We have to be able to do that. You know, some people are good at things like working on cars or working on houses or doing things like that. You're good with your hands, and we have a lot of people that are doing a lot of things here to help set this up so we can have a better audio-visual system here and better way of recording the sermon. So I leave that to the professionals. I don't touch that, but there are people who are good at that. And to those people, I appreciate that. I thank them from the bottom of my heart. And all the rest of us should be thankful that there are other people here doing things that they can do that we can't. Let's all be thankful for everyone involved in keeping this building in shape for our gathering to God's glory. And that means whether it's cleaning the toilet or preaching a sermon, no part is more important. No one's part is more important than anyone else's. What really matters is that we each do what we can to glorify God and encourage one another, or transform sinners into saints, as we said earlier. And that means we each must determine that we want to glorify God and then get to work with our whole heart doing just that. After all, that's why we're here. We're here to glorify God by transforming sinners into saints, so live as if the end is near, sound in mind, stretched out in love, as stewards of grace. And that begins with simple obedience to the will of God. And I don't think there's anyone here who's never obeyed the gospel, so we won't belabor this, but maybe someone will watch the video that'll see this and so they cry, what must I do to be saved? We need to always remember there are things that we need to do to be saved. If there's anyone here this evening as we wrap this up that needs encouragement, that feels like maybe there's some things here that have been exposed as weaknesses in their life and they want to be helped to become better at it, they want to be encouraged, or if any other way you feel like you need the encouragement of these brethren, we'll give it to you. We'll help you. And if you're willing to do that, please come while we stand and while we sing.